Well, thanks to listening to the On the Porch podcast with me, Silas House. We're really fortunate to have two members of the band Zoe Speaks in the studio with us, Carla Gover and Mitch Barrett. We'll be talking to them today. The other members of the band are Owen Reynolds, Zoe Barrett, and Arlo Barnett. Zoe Speaks' songs are socially conscious and spiritual, with themes ranging from the environment to family to addiction to interracial relationships. They bring a fresh and progressive look at Appalachia with their Americana-flavored sound. They combine heirloom songs and striking originals to shine a light on another side of our region. Mitch, Carla, welcome to On the Porch.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here. We've been wanting to come for a long time.
Well, yeah. I'm glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about this brand new album you have out. It's called Wings.
Well, we're real excited to make it. We made it over the course of the last year and a half, and we released it in June. It was our first studio album in 10 years. Our band had a little hiatus, and it is all originals with one traditional, songs that Mitch and I have written. And we made it with producer Jesse Wells up at Morehead State University, so it was a real treat to work with him. He's out on the road with Tyler Childers these days, and so we're glad that we got to do that with him. And we've had some good response. Our fans have been real supportive in helping us make it, and after we've released it, and then we also, within a few weeks of it coming out, it had charted at number one on the folk charts.
Wow.
So we'll see.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Jesse's been such a, he's made so much contribution to Kentucky music over the last, I don't know, last couple of decades, I guess. He's just a really, and didn't he work at the Folk Museum at Morehead with the music program?
He still does. He's still on the faculty there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, glad to hear his name. He's done a lot of great.
He's a treasure,
music.
And we have a lot of treasures in this state.
He's an amazing picker, too.
Well, you all have been around for quite a while, but in different iterations and with some hiatuses and et cetera, et cetera. So just tell us a little bit about when you started and all that.
Well, we started 30, 40 years ago.
No. A little over 20 years ago.
20 years, yeah. And we were just, well, doing pretty much the same thing we're doing now, you know, writing our own songs and touching our traditional roots. We always had some traditional music mixed with our writing and named the band Zoe Speaks because our daughter Zoe, who plays with us now, was just a tiny baby at the time. And that's how it all started, touring around and doing educational programs and festivals and concerts.
We are kind of a non-traditional family band in that we played together for about 12 years and then we got divorced. But we have two daughters together, so of course we worked together to raise them. And about 3 years ago, we were asked to do a reunion show. And it was really fun, and we got our grown daughter playing with us, her fiancé, who's a great picker, playing with us, and it just has kind of snowballed from there, and it just feels really good. It's nice to have the family harmonies, and, you know, we've just played together so long, it feels easy, to fall into a groove.
Yeah.
You were talking about, you know, doing originals, but also having traditional songs on there. And one thing that makes me think of is the great fusion that happened with your song, the way you did Shady Grove.
Yeah.
Because it made it, you know, here's this traditional song that most people know, but you all made it into something completely new. Will you talk a little bit about that?
It came out of working with high school students. We were trying to write songs with them, but also turn them on to traditional music and somehow make it cool to them. So we used the bones, you know, the skeleton of Shady Grove, and gave it more content, you know, just to make it about this interracial couple. And so we wrote all those verses and
funked it up a little bit.
Yeah, threw in a little backbeat on it and tried to put a rap part in the middle, but that turned into spoken word. But
that's one thing I love about folk music is, I don't know, some people have this notion that folk music is static and that it must, you know, always be about the past. But real folk music is progressive, right? And it changes.
Absolutely. And honestly, in my experience, the people that are the most prescriptive about how Appalachian folk music should be are usually the people that are not from here that play it. You know, the people that are from Appalachia, mixed styles. When I was growing up, we didn't call bluegrass and old time anything different. It was all just music. I went to college and learned that it was considered to be two different categories, and if you played one, you probably didn't play the other. You know, there's almost, mm-hmm. Especially on the West Coast, there's this great separation. So I think it's an inherently fluid medium when you're working in folk music. I mean, the songs themselves, a lot of them will have a repeated verse or a motif or a phrase, you know, milk white skin and ruby red cheeks. Mm-hmm. And it makes it, it's almost like quilting. It's easy to kind of take pieces and parts and put them together and add your own creativity and make it relevant to your generation, yeah. your issues, your time.
Right.
And growing up hearing traditional music and then realizing that that had already changed from its original mm-hmm. form. I think one of our early CDs, somebody called us a revivalist. And there were so many bands like out at the time who weren't from the region, dressing like what they thought Appalachian people.
Like the Grapes of Wrath. Or
right.
Something.
Yeah.
Gangsters in malls.
And they called us revivalists. We were like, well, actually, we're just creating from
what we learned from our grandparents.
Yeah, what we learned, you know, mm-hmm. what we grew up hearing, and we're taking it another round. But I don't know. It's
right.
To me.
Even like the Carter family, you know, people think of them as, you know,
just traditional.
So traditional, mm-hmm. but they too changed it. I mean, they were taking these songs that were like 6 or 7 minutes long, for example, and making them radio friendly or record friendly, right?
Yeah.
Into a 3-minute, 2-minute song. So that's one way they changed it. But I mean, that's always happened with folk music. But I always think of you all as just being the perfect fusion of that. I love the way that you pay such homage, you know, to the tradition and to the heritage, but you're also always updating it and making it fresh and new. And that's what I think of when I think it's Always Speaks. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, how did growing up, I mean, it's sort of, we're already talking about this, mm-hmm. but how did growing up in Appalachia shape you as artist and people?
Well, I think that's something that you don't fully realize until you start to travel and work outside the region. You know, you don't realize mm-hmm. all the ways that you've been shaped by your culture because you don't realize that everybody in the world doesn't live right like you do. But what I've come to realize over time is just there's such a sense of connection to the land and the places that are special to my people, the home places that are in our family, and the ways that we were taught to take care of ourselves and to do for ourselves and to raise food and make the things that we needed and to be able to have a connection with the source of our own sustenance. And I think that's been really formative, and just a deep love of the music and the musical traditions that were passed on, of music that we learned from family members and grandparents and community members and aunts and uncles. That's been such a source of strength and mine for my own songwriting and my own career as an artist. And I can't imagine what I would have done mm-hmm. without it growing up somewhere else.
My grandfather, my father's father, my mother's mother and father played music too in the home. But my grandfather, I think, really influenced me in that he just played, and he never played in public, but he mm-hmm. played every night for himself.
Right.
And I'm sure that had an effect on me, because there had definitely been times that I wasn't making a living playing music, but I still played. And I was thinking about it yesterday. I've been working with, it's not just the music, the arts too. I was coming into the holler and I saw this young fella at a locust tree. You know how it gets the big old thorns on it? And here he stood on the side of the road with some leather gloves on, and he was twisting those locust thorns off. And I've actually done that, making, you know, just messing around, making something in the yard, some piece of art or something. And I thought if a stranger went by from outside the region, they would think, what is wrong with that man, you know? But I knew exactly what he was doing. He was creating something, you know?
Right.
And he probably is not like a working artist. He's just... That's just something his family did. And I don't know. I think sometimes when I think about, like, we didn't kill hogs and stuff, but we did when I was a child. And sometimes I think, man, I wish I had taught my kids that. Mm-hmm. But then I think about the harder times, and I'm like, well, I'm glad we didn't have to. But I see my little boy walk down to his granny's through the woods on a path. And it just tickles me that I, you know, 58 years ago, 54 years ago, I was walking that same path through the woods, going out to visit my granny and grandpa and stuff.
Yeah, so, most kids don't have that.
So even if it's not like the music or just some of the lifestyle that we have living
in, it's the whole way of life.
Yeah.
I went with Brett Ratliff in November out to Portland, Oregon, where old-time music of Kentucky and Appalachia in general is really popular. And we were just teaching string band workshops and banjo workshops and fiddle workshops the whole time. And we found ourselves talking as much as we were teaching them tunes, because the only context that they had for the music that they were playing was, you know, the Lomax recording from 1964. Or they were just fascinated to hear all the stories. Well, we played this one up on the graveyard, or we played this one when we were digging taters, or whatever. They just, you know, the older I get, the more I value that, the whole way of life that we still have here in Kentucky, but especially, like Mitch was saying, when we were younger, the things that we learned from the old people.
Right. Well, let's hear a song from the new album.
Okay.
While y'all are getting that together, I'll tell everybody out there that we are talking to Carla Gover and Mitch Barrett, members of the Kentucky-based band Zoe Speaks, here on The Porch. I'm your host, Silas House, and we're on WUKY 91.3 FM. Do y'all want to tell us something about the song?
Well, this one came out of, there was a little coffee shop in Berea called the Black Feather, and it's not there anymore, but I was down there one morning after the students had gone back to class and stuff, so I had the place to myself, and I was sitting on their patio and just doing that thing where you're not quite awake and you go down the rabbit hole worrying about bills and your kids and things like that, and you don't realize what your face looks like, you know, and a stranger catches you with your mouth open or something, but... But I felt this somebody looking at me, and I came back to. I came back out of the hole, and I looked, and there was a crow sitting on a post. I was out on the patio, you know, and he was just looking at me like, "What's up? You know, what are you doing?" And it just hit me, instead of wasting my time, as my granny would say, "Worry is a waste of time. You know, you say a prayer, don't just worry." But it just dawned on me, you know, that I was wasting my time, and that. Daggone it, I'm an artist. I'm a songwriter. My son's mother, Melody Youngblood, and I sat there and just did a little writing exercise and came up with this. Black Feather, don't need no coffee. Sit watching morning come. Black Feather, ain't got no worries. You're the lucky one. Sing right out loud. Yeah, you sing so proud. While conjuring your next meal. Oh, I wish I was a blackbird. That's how I feel. Sing right out loud. Yeah, you sing so proud. While conjuring your next meal. Oh, I wish I was a blackbird. That's how I feel. I got a traveling bone, where I hang my hat's my home. From song to song I roam these hills, and I bet you that's exactly how that blackbird feels. Sing right out loud. Yeah, I sing so proud. While conjuring my next meal. Oh, I wish I was a blackbird. I wish I was a blackbird. Blackbird, that's how I feel. Black Feather, don't need no coffee. Sit and watch the morning come. Black Feather, ain't got no worries. You're the lucky one. Yeah. to the lucky one. It dawned on me after I wrote this on my little exercise that everything I write is La Bamba. Black feather, they ain't got no worries. You're the lucky one.
That's great. Thank you. Well, you all have always been a pretty socially active in social justice as musicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just as people, but in your music. So can you talk a little bit about that and why you do that and the risk that you run as a group in doing that and all the layers of that?
I don't feel like I ever consciously tried to write a song, you know, a protest song or whatever.
That's probably why it works.
You know, I always thought, you know, gosh, I wish I could write Blowing in the Wind or something. Right. But I never tried because, you know, that's Bob Dylan, you know. But I think just the subject matter, you know, of life and children and living in Appalachia and all of that is it just conjures up social consciousness, you know, just like Money's Our God. I don't think we knew the impact that would have. Like, that was like a favorite song of so many working moms and dads.
He's talking about a song from our first mm-hmm. album.
Yeah. People
we were just writing about our own experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's just that part of it, like, it's coming out of we're thinking about things from a spiritual perspective or a socially conscious perspective, but then writing from our own experience, and it just kind of comes out that way. I mean, if there's anything deliberate about our work as social justice activists, I would say there's a twofold stream. You know, there's the stream in Appalachia of artists like Gene Ritchie and Cy Conn, who have written songs to protest unfair working conditions, environmental degradation, but then also the songwriters of the 60s and 70s, you know, that we grew up hearing when we were younger. Certainly, you know, John Denver to Neil Young, those kinds of artists made their effect on us. Certainly me.
I think doing a lot of the arts work, working with recovering addicts, I think that's influenced, you know, not that I tried to write a song, I would just be working with them, and a lot of times that would affect some of the songs that I wrote.
Well, and I think something that artistically we've always tried to do is it's really easy to get over earnest when you're writing a protest song or a social justice song and to come off as preachy or super earnest and to maybe miss the mark artistically, you know, like you're just mm-hmm. being too literal. So right. To write a song that is both hopefully touches hearts and makes people think about something in a way that you want to help make them think about it, but without knocking them over the head
right.
with it.
It has to have layers.
There's an art, definite art to it. So we're trying.
Well, you're succeeding. Well, we've talked before about how lucky we are to live in a place like Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Because although people outside the region think otherwise, we are such an arts-centric place. I mean, we're talking about, one of you were saying earlier about people creating stuff. And mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that, but when I was growing up, like, everybody was creating something. Mm-hmm. Like, they might not have thought of themselves as artists, but, you know, my uncles were always whittling, or mm-hmm. somebody was quilting, or mm-hmm. drawing, or people were always making things. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so much of our heritage and what people know about us in a positive way, because they know so much of us in a yeah. negative way, is arts-based, mm-hmm. literature, music. What's in the water here mm-hmm. that makes it that way?
There's a lot in the water. I hope that's good still in the water. I had a meeting this morning. I'm going to be working with some incarcerated recovering addicts. Mothers and working with their children in these after-school programs. And we were talking about some of just the, I think I said something about something my dad had said once about getting under the weight, and that we come from people that, you know, I mean, they had lots of little sayings mm-hmm. that helped you realize, you know, life's hard and you gotta get under the weight. And but we were talking about all these folks that are going through these really hard times right now, and it seems to be an epidemic, and they come from that creative place. It's in our blood, and we were just trying to figure out how do we tap into getting the arts just bringing it to the surface, you know, you're not teaching somebody something because they already know it. They already know how to do this stuff. And we were just trying to figure out, how can we get that to these folks from this region that are suffering from that? Because it's in all of them. You can say something your grandfather said and they recognize it. Oh, my granny said that, mm-hmm. you know, and you're like, yeah.
I think of whenever I try to think about this, because I ask the same question a lot, what is it? You know, because I feel like we're in the middle of a full-blown cultural renaissance right now here in Kentucky mm-hmm. with our writers and our musicians going out onto the national stage and really in a big way. But I think maybe that our ancestors that came from the British Isles were really focused on balladry and song and lyric. Scotland is one place that I have seen the same reverence for somebody just standing up singing an a cappella song as I have seen in Eastern Kentucky. But also the indigenous people of Kentucky, you know, pretty much all the indigenous people, I guess, all over the world, art is something that's integrated into your everyday life in the adornments you make for your baby clothes, in the tools that you make to cook with, right. in your dwellings, in your blankets. So I don't think we often see, but I think it's always felt, the influence of the indigenous ancestors that we have. And so I think it all comes together. And I think Alice Walker said something in one of her books about how, to her, one of the ways you can tell how advanced and refined a civilization is by how much time they put into making their baby clothes, like these highly beaded things that they're only going to wear for a couple months. But I don't know, it just made me think of that. You know, we value it here. Right. I don't know why. I don't know all the reasons why, but people still value the arts.
I think one part of it is sort of what Mitch was saying, is I think difficulty gives birth to great art. Mm-hmm. When it's a hard place in many ways, economically, for instance, politically, et cetera. Those two things right there, that gives birth to good stories and good music.
That's true. Right? Yeah, I'm not sure that watching Netflix and ordering Uber Eats is going to produce
exactly
the next William Faulkner.
right.
Well, I think exposure or teaching our own culture to our children and the folks who live here, I think, is a key, because they can make that connection of, you know, I hate the stereotype of, you know, good art comes from struggle. You know, I've always been like, I don't want to struggle. I don't care if it does make a good song. I don't want to write that song again. But
it's true.
It's true.
Well, another project I wanted to talk about just a little bit that I really love is the Cornbread and Tortillas project. See, mm-hmm. will y'all talk about that a little?
Well, Cornbread and Tortillas was an idea that I had a long time ago, because I got simultaneous degrees in Appalachian Studies and Spanish when I was an undergraduate at UK. And that was right when we were starting to see a real population explosion of Latin Americans moving to Kentucky for the horse and tobacco industries and other things. And since then, it's only continued to grow. Kentucky has, I think, the fastest growing Latino population in the South.
Yeah.
And you can't learn a language without learning about the culture. And as I learned more about the cultures of Latin America, particularly Mexico, because I had at the time a lot of friends from Mexico, I couldn't help but see similarity after similarity between the way I'd grown up and the way my friends from Mexico were talking about their grandparents in the same ways. And I thought it would be a real shame, with all of these people moving here from a place that had so much in common, if these two groups, the people that had been living in Kentucky for a while and then the ones that were coming here, were to not understand each other and were to mm-hmm. not realize how much they have in common. And so when we met this band Appalatin, and I'm now, you know, one of the members of that is now my partner, we realized it was a perfect opportunity to collaborate and bring that idea into fruition. So we have the centerpiece of Cornbread and Tortillas is a multidisciplinary stage show that has storytelling, music, and dance from Appalachia and Latin America. It's bilingual, so we have bits of it in English and Spanish, and it's really fun. It's a real tour de force. We have also put on a couple festivals, done some school shows and community events, but the main thing that we've been focusing on is developing this show, and we're getting asked without really even promoting it. It's kind of like with your In These Fields performance that I was a part of. Mm-hmm. You know, we did it once, and then people just heard about it and kind of mm-hmm. kept asking us to come to different places. And that's kind of what's happening, because suddenly in our culture, in our national stage and also regionally, we find ourselves in a time when there's all this huge furor around immigration. I mean, right now our entire government is shut down, and we're hearing that immigrants from Latin America are bringing disease and crime Mm-hmm. And we're just trying to provide a different narrative. And, you know, you can preach at people all day, but if you throw a big party and have food and music and dancing,
yeah,
it's a good way to change hearts.
Well, I think it's just beautiful. And I was going to say, I think it's more important than ever to see this show, Cornbread and Tortillas. So if there are people out there listening that put on this kind of program, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough, especially with what's going on, the tragedy that's going on right now in our country with this misinformation.
And,
yeah. Did you want to add to that, Mitch?
Eat with your neighbors.
Right. That's always a good thing.
Make a place for everybody at the table.
And before I let you go, I also wanted to ask about the Kentucky Songcrafters Collective that you're part of.
Yes. Yeah, so that's, I'm talking a lot because I'm the one that like nerds out behind the scenes and builds all the websites and stuff. But that is a project we're doing in collaboration with about 10 other Kentucky songwriters, many of whom have had cuts with national recording artists or placements in movies and soundtracks. And the whole idea is that a rising tide lifts all boats. And because there is something in the water with Kentucky music, we are trying to just kind of come together for the purpose of having a curated group of songwriters whose work, if a recording artist wants to come and find a good song to record for their new album, you know, out of Nashville or whatever, they know that they can come to this website, hear all our music, have it arranged nicely. We're going to have all of the licensing agreements and all the paperwork needed, also so that music supervisors and film supervisors can come. And hopefully we get song placements in movies and television because
Great.
We're having to be creative to find other ways to make a living now that CD sales aren't a thing, because that used to make up almost 50% of our income. We would make as much again from CD sales as we did from the actual performance fees. And with that kind of evaporating, because people can pay $10 a month for Spotify, we're looking at other ways to be creative and make a living as songwriters. And that's kind of the new record deal, as it were, you know, getting placed in a film or TV. And there's just so much talent, and we can kind of all help each other, make each other look better. We've got the local Honeys are part of that. Tiffany Williams is going to be in there with us. Jerry Catherine Howell. Eric Cummins, Brett Ratliff, I'm forgetting.
And would it be open to other musicians?
Yeah, we're going to start with what we have, just because it's a lot of administrative stuff to get everybody's work online, but yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Speaking of soundtracks and speaking of nerding out, I'll nerd out a little bit and just say that when I think about a soundtrack for my life, two songs on there would be by Zoe Speaks. And one of them is Wings of Dove, and the other one is Sacred Yard. And so I think y'all are going to do Wings of a Dove for us, right, to close us out.
All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
Are we ready?
When you are.
Yeah, this one is kind of a good one, building on our earlier discussion about turning our writing songs that come out of our struggles. But this is hopefully one. Where I'm at now is not just writing the sad songs, but trying to find triumph out of my tragedies. So.
This is how the story begins, with all the things that I've been through. I guess I'll have to try and pretend that I'm okay, till I don't have to. And I see miles and miles of blue green hills to climb. And I know nothing's gonna hold me back this time, 'cause I've never felt so free. I feel the changes washing over me. And I never felt such love. It's just like flying on the wings of a dove. Sometimes when you think it's the end, you find out it's the beginning. Sometimes when you think that you've lost, never felt so free. I feel the changes washing over me, and I never felt such love. It's just like flying on the wings of a somehow broken. Funny about this cage I've been in all this time. The door was open and I see miles and miles of endless open sky. And I finally feel never felt so free. I feel the changes washing over me, and I've never felt such love. It's just like flying on the wings of
Hope all of you out there will be sure to pick up a copy of Zoe Speak's new album. It's called Wings. Support your local independent artist. You can find copies of it wherever fine music is sold. Thanks so much for being here today, Mitch and Carla.
Thanks for having us.
Sure appreciate you. They are members of Zoe Speak's, and that new album is Wings. Thanks to all of you for joining us for another episode of On the Porch here on WUKY. Until next time, be good to one another.